Good day, everyone, and welcome to the DB2 Chat with the Lab Series conference call. Today's call is being recorded. There is a PowerPoint presentation of charts. If you do not have the charts, you can download them from ibm.com/db2/labchats. Again, that is ibm.com/db2/labchats. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Sal Vella, Vice President of DB2 Development for Linux, Unix, and Windows, and Business Intelligence. Please go ahead, sir.
We host this DB2 Chat with the Labs. This is the 8th in our series of calls. I want to thank everyone for joining us on this call. I want to acknowledge the support of IDUG, the International DB2 Users Group, in getting the word out for this call. The Information on Demand Conference was a tremendous success, with about 6,000 attendees and a very high energy level throughout the week. There were many, many analyst attendance, press conferences, and a full partner expo and conference. The overall information management portfolio that we built was very well received. The information server, like the WebSphere application server a decade ago, integrates a previously disparate set of services into a single integrated package. That was a key announcement during the conference. The acquisition of FileNet was completed, and this adds to our capabilities in the content management space. Cheetah, which is the next version of IDS, was unveiled, and we made several announcements around the BCU and our direction to produce more BCUs in the Linux space. From a DB2 point of view, the conference was great news. DB2.9 is getting great acceptance, wide acceptance. Compression is a killer feature that resonates with every single customer. Over and over again, I heard customers telling other customers, quoting the disk savings that one key customer, SunTrust, presented at the conference. A lot of interest in XML as customers look for ways to exploit what we've shipped. And there's a great customer presentation by TD Securities that demonstrated how they're simplifying their IT infrastructure through an XML-based, standards-based infrastructure. Today's chat with the labs will focus on one of the key manageability features of DB2.9, automatic storage. One of the key pain points for database administrators is the management of storage. No one wants to call in the middle of the night just to add storage to a table space container. Automatic storage solves that problem. This feature can associate a set of storage paths with a database, create table spaces on these storage paths without explicitly specifying storage or containers, and lets DB2 automatically extend and add containers on the fly. I'd like to introduce the presenter for today who will tell you more about our automatic storage capabilities in DB2.9. Amir Sakadina is a senior DB2 software engineer based here in the Toronto lab. Amir was one of the key technical leads in the development of the automatic storage feature in DB2. He's been a member of the DB2 development team for over a decade and is helping to drive the overall storage architecture and strategy for DB2. Many thanks again, and enjoy the presentation.
Hi, everybody. Just a few credits here. I had Matt Harris and Kelly Schlamb, who are also architects and senior engineers here that have helped me come up with this presentation. I've been working in the buffer management and storage management area for about 5 years now, and I was the architect of the DB2 automatic storage technology. So that's what I'm going to walk you through today. Slide 2 lists our agenda. I'm going to introduce two new concepts that we introduced in DB2 version 8.2.2 initially. And that is auto-resize table spaces and the concept of automatic storage and automatic storage table spaces. And then we'll talk about some hints, tips, and best practices, things like monitoring, recovery, migration, and some other miscellaneous hints and tips. Slide 3. So we're going to start off with auto-resize table spaces. This is a new concept. Slide 4. So what is an auto-resize table space? Well, an auto-resize table space is a DMS table space that has file containers that automatically extend. We introduced this in what was version 8 6-pack 9 or version 8.2.2. This is a technology that applies to DMS file table spaces only. Table spaces with raw device containers cannot be enabled for auto-resize. And as you know, with SMS, SMS is implicitly an auto-resize type of technology. So this technology really only applies to DMS file. So the idea here is that in the past, before auto resize, when you try to insert, when some application tried to insert records into a table space and that table space ran out of space, the application got back an ugly SQL 0289 return code saying unable to allocate pages. And in many, many cases, the underlying file system was not full. And so what this solves is no longer do you get that error message back if auto resize is enabled. DB2 will automatically grow the last range of containers in the table space. Of course, if the file system is full, then we'll have no choice but to return the return code that you used to get. Slide 5. So in a nutshell, without auto resize, you're doing some work, inserting some data into your database, and you get a negative 289 return code if you're out of space in the table space. Administrator's paged out. Administrator comes in and issues a resize container and notifies users that the space has been added and operations resume. Whereas with auto-resize, DB2 automatically auto-resizes the container and the administrator can sleep through the night. Slide 6. So, as an aside, I thought it would be useful to talk through why we've decided to concentrate so much on DMS file and add technology to it. So the high-level trade-offs included you get outstanding performance on DMS raw versus you get very good performance on DMS file, and that you get a lot of flexibility that a file system manages offers to manage your storage. And, of course, there's the outstanding manageability on SMS. So why have we chosen DMS file as our strategic direction? So there are a few technology trends here that you should be aware of. One is that direct and concurrent I/O are basically narrowing the performance gap between file systems and raw devices. So with concurrent I/O and direct I/O today, we're looking at the performance difference between raw devices and file systems being negligible, so usually a few single-digit percent. And over time, we believe that this trend will cause raw devices to diminish in favor of file systems. We believe that many of our customers are going to continue to use raw devices, and we're going to continue to support raw devices for the foreseeable future, just like we're going to continue to support SMS for the foreseeable future. But these are the reasons why we decided to concentrate on DMS file. So the idea is that we can get the best of both worlds with DMS file, near raw performance with direct I/O and concurrent I/O. You have the flexibility of DMS functionality. Some things that you can do with DMS are not found in SMS. And then you have the manageability of file systems and the on-demand growth as you had in SMS without a resize. Slide 7. So there's some new syntax for create and alter tablespace that you can use with this new technology. So we've added a new parameter, auto resize no or yes. So by default, the default is no. And to turn auto resize on, you say create tablespace and you specify the auto resize parameter as yes. There's also an increase size that you can specify. By default, we pick an increase size of 32 megabytes. That's the granularity at which we extend tablespaces. You can also specify your own increase size either in kilobytes, megabytes, or gigabytes, or as a percentage of the current tablespace size. And then there's a max size parameter, which allows you to set a quota on how large any particular tablespace can be auto-grown to ensure that no tablespace runs away and uses up all the space in your file system. All of these parameters are something that you can alter to existing tablespaces using the alter tablespace command. In multi-partition databases, these values that you provide here, like increase size and max size, are done on a per-partition basis. Slide 8. So increase size specifies the amount of space to automatically add when the file system is full, and max size is the quota, and auto-resize if it's enabled but no values are specified. Like I pointed out, a default increase size will be picked of 32 megabytes, and the default max size is none, which means we'll go up to wherever the file system allows us to allocate space. Slide 9. So here are some examples of using auto resize, so you can create a table space managed by database using a file container with auto resize. Yes, and then there's a few other examples that that allow you to see increased size and max size being used to change the auto resize behavior. Slide 10. So how does growth occur when auto resize is being used? So the table space will be auto extended only when it's full and more space is needed. So if you have extents in the table space that are not currently being used by any tables, so for example, you might have heard of pending delete extents. We make sure that there is really no other space in the table space, so that we're not unnecessarily growing. So if you've got space in the table space that's been created by a table that was dropped, for example, we'll go out and we'll use that first. It's only when we realize that there's no more space that we'll go out and try to grow the table space. We'll only grow those containers that are in the last range of the table space map, and I'll talk a bit about what a range is. And the idea here is that we wanted to come up with an algorithm that ensures that as a result of auto resize, a rebalance doesn't happen in the background. And auto growth will stop if any of the following conditions occur. If the table space grows to the point where max size is reached, you told us there was a quota and we would stop there. Or if one of the containers in the last range can't grow any further. So we try to preserve the level of striping that you've set up in your table space, and for that reason we will not automatically extend the other containers in the range. To continue growth, you can add space to the file system or new stripes. I have some more detailed examples of those scenarios. Slide 11. So a very quick primer on ranges, because I introduced this term. Every DMS table space has a map that describes the logical and the physical layout of the table space, and a range is a region in the map where striping involves a unique set of containers. So I've provided you an example over here where we're creating a table space TS1 with three containers. Note that container 0, the size of it is 60 pages, container 1 is 60 pages, but container 2 is of size 40 pages. Now, this is not normally what we recommend you do. Normally, we recommend that all your containers are the same size, so I'm just doing this just to show you what a range is. Right? In this example, extent size is 10. Now, remember that the first extent in every container is going to be used for metadata called the container tag. So containers 0 and 1 have 5 usable extents, so it's really 6, but then the tag takes away 1. And then container 2 has 3 usable extents. So if you took a look at the map of this particular table space, you can see the map on the left-hand side. We can go all the way up through extent 8, striping evenly between containers 0, 1, and 2, and then after that, there's no more space left in containers 2. So we continue our striping just on containers 0 and 1. And so we have two ranges here. There's range 0, which goes from extent 0 to extent 8, which includes all three containers, and then range 1, which goes from extent 9 to extent 12 and only includes containers 0 and 1. So we would only be auto-resizing the last range. So in this case, range 1, which means only containers 0 and 1 would be getting auto-resized, because if we try to auto-resize container 2, it would cause a rebalance. Slide 12. So here's an example of auto-growth stopping. So the first picture up on this slide is we're doing auto-resize. The outer gray box there denotes the file system size, and the solid blue box denotes that's the container size at that time. So next up is that containers 0 and C1 are auto-extended as the table space grows. Next step, well, now the table space has grown to a point where the file system that container C1 is on is full. Well, at this point, here are the options to kick off auto-growth again, right? So DB2 is not going to be able to auto-grow past this point because one of the two file systems is full, and since we are going to try to do the striping you asked us to do by virtue of the containers that you created, we're not just going to go out and grow C0. So either you can make more room available on the file system holding C1, or you can add a new stripe set, and that's what we would recommend if number one is not possible. Or you could explicitly extend container C0 by some amount. And that would be your way of telling us that I want to explicitly go out and reduce striping. So the first option, if you go out and just make more room on the file system that C1 is on, auto resize will just continue. Slide 2, you could go out and add two new containers, C2 and C3, and then those would make up the last range. You'd have to use the add new stripe set version of alter tablespace to do that. And finally, you could just add one new stripe set using a container just on the file system that C0 resides on, and we would continue with auto-growing just that container. Slide 13. So the next new concept I'll introduce is automatic storage. Slide 14. So what is automatic storage? So automatic storage is a technique where the storage for multiple table spaces is managed at the database level. So what we've done here is, in the past, what you had were multiple points of storage management. We called them table spaces, right? And anytime you had to provision a new table space for a new set of tables or a new schema or a new application, you had to go out and provision some storage for it in terms of, you know, containers in the case of DMS file, or file systems in the case of SMS, or raw devices in the case of DMS raw. So the idea here is that we're now making the database the point of storage management. So when you provision space, you provision that to the database, and once you do that, you're able to go out and create table spaces to your heart's content without specifying any containers. It's at the database level that we will do the space management. So there are many reasons for having multiple table spaces other than using them as a point of storage management. So, for example, you might want to combine logically related tables into the same table space so that you can back up and recover them together. Or you might want to separate logically unrelated table spaces in different table spaces so that they can be recovered independently. Or you can place objects of a table into separate buffer pools by separating them into different table spaces. So the concept of a table space is still valid, and you're still able to do all of this, except now storage management is easier because storage management is done at the database level. So this removes the need to watch out for disk shortages on individual table spaces. It removes the need to manage and enlarge containers or add stripe sets on a per table space basis. You specify your list of storage paths at the database level when you create the database. And then if your database needs more storage, you can use new alter database syntax to add a new storage path to the database. And your table spaces will automatically see this new space. We use DMS infrastructure internally for this technology. I'll talk in some more details about this in the next few slides. Slide 15, so automatic storage allows you to create a database and associate a set of storage paths with it, and then you can add more storage paths after creation, and after that you can create what we call automatic storage table spaces, and these are table spaces that you create without specifying any explicit container definitions. The containers are automatically created across all the database storage paths, and the growth of existing containers and any addition of space to existing table spaces and new table spaces is managed by DB2. And we're striping across all the automatic storage paths that you've specified. Automatic storage also allows you to very easily redefine the database's storage paths during a database restore. So anybody who's done a redirected restore on a table space by table space basis understands the pain associated with having to redefine containers for every single table space. So automatic storage allows you to redefine the storage paths for the entire database, and then you don't have to specify any per table space containers. Slide 16. Quaid's database syntax has been changed to support this functionality. There's a new field called automatic storage, no or yes. The default in version 8 is automatic storage, no. And I'll talk about how there's more than one way to get automatic storage on version 8. In version 9, this default has been changed so that automatic storage is indeed the default. You can specify more than one path, and we will stripe your data across all the paths you specify. So these are the paths after the on clause. And there's also a new parameter allowing you to specify the DB path, a separate path for the DB path. I'll talk about this in more detail as well. The tablespace definitions for the three default tablespaces, you can specify automatic storage if you want. If you're using an automatic storage database, enabled database, then by definition those tablespaces will be automatic storage, but you have the ability to go in and override that if you want for the catalog or temp or whatever. Slide 17. So as I was saying, you can enable automatic storage explicitly with the automatic storage yes option, as in the first create database of testDB1. Or it can be implicitly enabled by specifying more than one path on the on option. Since we didn't support more than one path before automatic storage, if you supply more than one path to us, we're going to assume that you mean automatic storage. Now, bear in mind that this is really most applicable for version 8. For version 9, the only option you really have is automatic storage. That's the default. The paths listed with the on option, so this is slide 18, are the database's storage paths. If on is not specified in the database, then the database has one storage path determined by the database manager configuration parameter default DB path. And this is no different from what it was like before. Your user space, temp space, and catalog space would just exist on that single path. The database path is determined in the following order. If you specify a path explicitly with using the DB path parameter, then that's what will be used for the database path. If that's not specified, then the first path listed with the on option will be used as the DB path. And if that's not specified, then the database manager configuration path, default DB path, will be used as the DB path. Now, what goes under this database path are things like metadata, so definitions about which tablespaces are in the database, which buffer pools are in the in the database, where the default log directory is, and so on. So by default, syscat space, temp space, user space 1, and any subsequently created tablespaces are created as automatic storage tablespaces. So some more on this later in an automatic storage database. However, if you go ahead and create your database as an automatic storage database, you're not limited to what types of tablespaces you can create. If you don't specify, any containers or SMS or DMS, we'll give you an automatic storage tablespace. But if you go out and you specify a full create tablespace command using SMS, DMS with explicit container paths, you're allowed to have a mix of any kinds of tablespaces you want. Maybe it's only some tablespaces that you want to use the database storage management versus others you want to use raw devices or SMS or DMS, and you can do all of that with an automatic storage-enabled database. Slide 19. So some examples of what will occur. Note the first two examples on the left-hand side. That's really a statement for version 8. On version 9, in both these cases here, automatic storage would be enabled by default. On version 8, automatic storage is not the default, and so you wouldn't get automatic storage behavior in these two cases. Next slide. So slide 20, we've added a new alter database SQL statement, and what this allows you to do is it allows you to add storage paths to an existing automatic storage enabled database. Now note that these paths may not be immediately used by table spaces until the existing paths are consumed. This statement is transactional in nature, so a log record is written, and it's eligible for replay during a roll forward command. More details on that when we talk about restore and roll forward and how it applies to automatic storage. The syntax for this is very simple. Alter database, database name, add storage on, you know, path 1, path 2, path 3. So here are some examples for how you can use this alter database command to add storage. Slide 21. Next we'll talk about automatic storage table spaces. Slide 22. So what's an automatic storage table space? This is a table space that will automatically manage its storage by drawing storage from the database's storage path. When you create this table space, you don't have to give it any containers explicitly. It automatically assigns containers to itself upon its creation. It automatically grows these containers, and it automatically adds new containers as new stripe sets when it's appropriate. And this is selected either via the new manage by automatic storage clause or by not specifying a manage by clause at all. So create tablespace bot on an automatic storage enabled database will give you a tablespace bot, and it will go out and get containers for itself from the database's storage pool. And this type of tablespace still uses the DMS infrastructure for permanent tablespaces, but it uses the SMS infrastructure for temporary tablespaces. And I'll talk a bit more about this later. So again, it requires no containers to be defined when a tablespace is created, and explicit container operations cannot be performed against this tablespace because you don't really know about the containers that are on this tablespace. They're all managed by DB2. These types of tablespace can have all of the other tablespace attributes that you're used to, so you can specify an extent size, or a prefet size, etc. And it can only be created in an automatic storage-enabled database. Slide 23. So some more details on what the create tablespace syntax looks like and some examples of this. So there's the optional manage by automatic storage clause. Again, if you don't specify that, we'll just assume it's an automatic storage tablespace unless you've said managed by system or managed by database. You have access to these parameters that I introduced to you for auto resize. So now you can see where some of the auto resize technology came from. So since we decided on building this technology based on the DMS concept, we had to go out and create this idea of an auto resize tablespace, not only so that it would benefit customers who are not using automatic storage, but also because this is really what automatic storage uses to go and add new space to an existing tablespace. So you have access to the same parameters that I showed you earlier for auto resize tablespace. So you can, for an automatic storage tablespace, if you've decided that you don't want it to go and get any more space, you can say auto resize no, and that's the size it's going to stay at, right? The default, of course, in the case of an automatic storage tablespace is that it's going to auto-grow. You can specify an increase size. The default is 32 megabytes, but you can specify 1% if you want, or kilobytes, megabytes, or gigabytes. And you can also specify the quota or max size if you want to limit how much space any one tablespace can grow to. So some examples, I start with a permanent tablespace, user one, a temp tablespace, and then some examples using some of the parameters I've talked about here. Slide 24. So just for information, not that you're really going to absolutely need this, but the container name format that we use for containers that are automatically created by DB2 for automatic storage tablespaces, well, there's the storage path that you provided us. And then we have a subdirectory for the instance. So we create a subdirectory with the instance name, the node number, it says always node 0000. That's applicable to non-DPF installations. And DPF installations, the node number is going to be whatever the node number is for that particular node, the name of the database, and then a directory starting with a T with the tablespace ID, and then the container ID and an extension. And there's a three-letter extension based on the type of data that we're storing. in that particular table space. So CAT says that this is a container for system for the system catalog table space. TMP says that this is a container for system temporary, and then there's one for user temp and user regular table space and a large table space. So I've given you some examples of what this looks and feels like. Slide 25. Regular and large table spaces are created using DMS as the underlying technology with file containers. So essentially, regular and large automatic storage table spaces are DMS auto-resize table spaces where the containers are managed by DB2. Some differences between automatic storage and non-automatic storage table spaces. Well, in regular non-automatic storage table spaces, you have to specify containers. Automatic storage, you don't have to specify containers. By default, in regular table spaces, automatic resizing of table spaces is off. You have to use auto-resize. In the case of automatic storage, auto-resize is on by default. You can do container operations on non-automatic storage table spaces. And with automatic storage table spaces, DB2 is managing the containers and the stripe sets, so you can't do container operations because DB2 is in control of this. The initial size of the table space is implied by the size of containers you specify for non-automatic storage, and then initial size is used to initialize the size of the table space for automatic storage. And the other very important one, and we'll talk about this in more detail, is that you can use redirected restore in an automatic storage table space to redirect the entire database on redirected restore. It's much simpler than the older per table space redirected restore functionality. Slide 26. So how does DB2 automatically assign containers to table spaces? So we're going to pick either 0 or 1 container per database storage path. We'll make an attempt to create containers with equal sizes, and we'll avoid storage paths with a relatively small amount of space, right? So this allows a more consistent set of striping as the table space grows. It causes us to not hit disk pull right away, necessitating a new stripe set. Slide 27. Recently added storage paths are not going to be used until a new stripe set is needed in one of the automatic storage table spaces. So I'll go through an example of this. As I described earlier, growth occurs by extending all of the containers in their last range in the map. So when automatic storage table spaces are normally growing, they just grow the containers that they already have. And when one of those containers is no longer able to grow, say you hit a file system full or something like that, then the table space goes back to the database and at that time any recently added storage paths will be considered and a new stripe set will be created using them. Slide 28. So this slide goes through the mechanics of how growth takes place in an automatic storage table space. So to begin with, we've got two storage paths and a table space as a container on each of these. Well, the next thing that happens is the user comes in, does an alter database, and adds a third storage path. But remember that since this table space already existed, the third storage path is not being used by this table space yet. To continue growing, next step, the table space must add a new stripe set. So what has occurred in this third step is that the file system that container 01 was on is full. So now the table space has to go back and add a new stripe set in order for it to continue growing. And when it's time to add a new stripe set, we add that new stripe set automatically because it's an automatic storage table space. And at that time, the third storage path that was added, well, that's now available for use. And a new stripe set is created using the two file systems that still have space on them. So C2 and C3 are the ones that now continue growing. So note, for simplicity purposes, I'm just showing you one table space in the database, but this is what would occur with other automatic storage table spaces in the database as well. Now, if you go further, well, what can happen is that the file system that C2 was on can fill up, At that point, when we go to add a new stripe set, we'll find that the only file system that has space is the file system with C3 on it. So we'll create a new stripe set, and we'll just extend the new container C4 on that file system. Now, what I showed you here was really on slide 28 was just for the purposes of pointing out exactly how growth is going to occur in Automatic Storage tablespaces. Right. If you go to slide 29, normally what I recommend customers do is your storage paths really should be the same size. So you should really be using storage paths that are even sizes. And so a typical scenario is more one-off. You've got two file systems that you specified as storage paths, and they're equal size. And we've got your table space with two containers, C0 and C1, on these storage paths. Next step is C0 and C1. Auto resize, and then they get to you get to a point where two new storage paths are added to the database. Now they're not used while C0 and C1 are happily resizing until we get to a point where the file systems that C0 and C1 are on are full. And at that point, the table space would go back to the database and say, where should I be creating this next stripe set? And the next stripe set is going to be created on the two new storage paths that were added. So this is how a typical system would work. Slide 30. So I pointed out to you earlier how temporary automatic table spaces use the SMS technology as the underlying table space type. And because of that, the auto resize options have no meaning on them, because SMS is already an auto-extend type of infrastructure where objects grow page by page, right? And so those options don't apply to temporary automatic storage tablespaces. Some differences between automatic storage and non-automatic storage temporary tablespaces is that the containers must be explicitly provided for regular SMS temporary tablespaces, whereas automatic storage tablespaces, the containers cannot be provided when the table space is created. For non-automatic storage, containers cannot be added once the table space has been created. Well, what happens with temporary automatic storage table spaces is every time DB2 starts up, we go out and make a determination of which paths should we be using to create the containers for temporary automatic storage table spaces. And we'll base this on trying to get the maximum amount of space for the temporary table space, along with getting the maximum amount of striping. So DB2 redefines which containers are used for the temporary automatic storage table spaces at every database startup. You can't use a redirected restore on a per table space level for non-automatic storage temporary table spaces. And again, you have this benefit that you can redirect at the entire database level, and all automatic storage table spaces get redirected for you. So I'll have some more details on that. Some mechanics on slide 31 on how do we go out and pick which storage paths to use to create a temporary tablespaces container. So I've given you an example here. So remember that with SMS tablespaces, the smallest container is going to be the limiting factor. So if we've got two containers, with one with 10 megabytes and one with 100 megabytes, a table space would be full after using 20 megabytes. That's what the SMS technology uses. So slide 32 gives you a really nice example where, you know, DB2 starts up and we have the following storage paths. What's our best choice for temporary table space? So path one is 100 megabytes, path two is 200 megabytes, and three and four are 400 megabytes, right? And so this is not saying that the temporary table space is going to go out and use all the space. It's just that this is the maximum amount that it could possibly use. So the first step, well, the first choice we have is we can use all four of these. That would give us great striping because we'd be across everything. But the effective size would be 400 megabytes because P1 would be limiting how far we can grow. The next choice is using P2, P3, and 4.4, P4. Well, we would stripe against three paths, but the effective size would be 600 megabytes, right? Because we would be limited by P2. And the third choice is we could use P3 and P4, and the effective size would be 800 megabytes. And finally, we could use choice 4, we could use P4, and the effective choice would be 400 megabytes. So the one we would pick in this case is choice 3. So this gives us the maximum amount of space for the temporary table space while still giving us striping. Slide 33. So some hints and tips and best practices. I'll go through these quickly. For the most part, I'd like these slides to be here just so you can go back and refer to them. So for monitoring, you can use the snapshot monitor to find out whether a database is automatic storage enabled or not and what the automatic storage table spaces are. You can also use the snapshot UDFs to get at this information using SQL. Slide 35. The per table space snapshot has also been changed to tell you whether the table space is using automatic storage, whether automatic auto resize is enabled or not, what the various parameters are for that table space, like max size, increase size, and so on, when the last successful resize was, and the last resize attempt, if the last resize attempt fails, then we've got an indicator for that as well. And again, this stuff is accessible via SQL using the snap get tablespace and snap get tablespace parse UDFs. Next slide. So this is using the using SQL to get at this information on slide 36. Slide 37. So automatic storage also has new health indicators. So there's a database automatic storage utilization health indicator that you can key off. And auto-resize DMS file table spaces also have health indicators associated with them that allow you to get at health information. Slide 38. So recovery. So I'll spend a bit more time over here. I've been talking about recovery for a little bit through this presentation. Slide 39. The syntax of the restore command has been modified. So normally you had just a to that you could specify and a target directory, and that was where the database path would go on and so on. So what we've done is we've tried to change restore to look and feel a lot more like what you would specify on create database. So now there's a on that you can specify as a parameter. And you can specify multiple paths, just like you could with create database using automatic storage. And similar to create database, there's another parameter that you can optionally specify to put the database path on a path that you'd like to specify. So I'll walk through some examples of using restore with this new type of syntax for automatic storage. Slide 40. So what are the rules for determining the database path and the storage path? So we'll determine these based on the following rules, right? So for the database path, if you specify the to clause, so this is the old syntax, right, or the DB path on clause, then that to us indicates that's where you want the database path to go. Else, if you specify the on clause, then the first path listed in the on clause is used as the database path. You'll remember this is much like what we do on create database. If none of the two on or DB path clauses are specified, then the default DB path database configuration parameter determines the database path, much like the existing behavior. However, if a database with the same name exists on disk, then the above is all ignored, and the database is restored to the same database path as the existing database. Okay? So the storage path, if the on clause is specified, then all the paths are considered as storage paths, and these paths will be used instead of the ones that are stored in the backup image. If the on clause is not specified, then no changes made to the storage path, and the storage paths in the backup image are maintained. So note that, you know, you can say for a database you've created on path A, path B, path C, you can now restore on path, you know, D, E, F, and G. And that will basically redirect the database to this new set of storage paths, and you don't have to, if all you're using is automatic storage table spaces, you don't have to specify any redirection on a per table space basis. So some examples over here. So in the case of example, so what we have got here is some database that exists in on file system 1, file system 2, and file system 3 as the storage path. With its DB path on file system 4, we back up the database and then eventually drop it. Well, now we restore the database without specifying anything. Well, what's going to occur is everything's going to remain the same. The DB path, however, is going to go with the default DB path based on the rules I specified. And this is really for compatibility with non-automatic storage with stores. And the storage paths will go on file system 1, file system 2, and file system 3. If you specify the 2 parameter, right, then the database path will go to where the 2 parameter specifies, and the storage paths will remain on FS 1, 2, and 3. However, if you use on, then we're going to put the database path on the first one of these two, and the storage paths will be both file system 1 and file system 2. Similarly, if you say on new file system 1, new file system 2, and DB paths on new file system 3, then we'll redirect the database to new file system 1 and file system 2, and the database path will be new file system 3. So in general, when using automatic storage, I would recommend that you always specify DB path both at the creation of the database time and creation and when you're doing restore. Slide 42. Now, if you do this type of redirection that we allow you to do with restore, so if you restore to a different set of storage paths, then what occurs is, in that case, when we during roll forward and we encounter log records that were associated with the add storage, alter database add storage, we won't be replaying them during the roll forward. And what we're doing is we're assuming here is that since you've decided to redirect the entire storage of the database, you don't want log records from the previous life of the storage of the database to be replayed. However, if you don't go out and redirect the storage and you're using the same path, then log records associated with add storage are going to be replayed. So specifically what I'm talking about here is the alter database add storage log record. Slide 43, you can use DB2 relocate DB if you've been using it before, and this can be used to change the database name, database path, and the location of the containers. There's what's new for automatic storage is that container path cannot be specified for an automatic storage tablespace. This is because the containers are managed by DB2. However, we've got a new clause here, storage path, that can be used to change the entire storage path using DB2 relocate DB. Slide 44, migration. So, slide 45, using this new functionality on existing databases. You can enable auto resize on existing DMS file tablespaces regardless of when they were created, right? So you could have created them in version 6. And when you move to the appropriate version, point release of version 8, you can say alter tablespace, auto resize, yes. And you can only do this if all of the containers are file, not raw devices. For tablespaces with raw devices, the only option you have is to back up the database, do a redirected restore specifying a list of file containers instead of raw device containers, and once that database is online, use alter tablespace to enable it. So, currently, automatic storage can only be invoked on new databases. This is the case both for version 8 and for version 9. Slide 46. Well, what if you want to move back to a pre-version 8.2.2 level of DB2? Well, you can't. You can only use auto-resize tablespaces so long as you disable auto-resize if you want to move back to an older version of DB2, right? Because the older version of DB2 doesn't understand what this thing auto-resize is. So long as you disable it, you can go back to an older version of DB2. Otherwise, the database is not going to be usable. Automatic storage databases are not usable on pre-version 8.2.2 levels of DB2. There's just too much metadata that the older levels of code just don't understand. Slide 47. Some miscellaneous best practices, hints, and tips. So one of the best practices when you're adding new containers to an auto-resized DMS tablespace, add them via adding a new stripe set. And always add containers that are the same size. And this is a general rule of thumb, regardless of whether you're using auto-resize or not. You know, try to make your containers the same size so that you have even striping. When you're defining or adding database storage paths, try to ensure that the file systems associated with the paths are approximately equal in size. And as I pointed out before, use the dbpath clause to keep the database directory control data or metadata on different storage than the storage paths, and avoid using the file systems associated with the database storage path for anything but DB2 tablespace data. So we allow you to not specify dbpath, and we'll pick the first storage path for the dbpath. But that's not ideal. What you would normally like to do on your installations is keep this metadata elsewhere on a different path. And it really depends depending on the non-DB2 activity that's occurring, you can have strange growth patterns for automatic storage tablespaces, which is why we recommend this. Now, when determining free space on a storage path, we won't use the last nth of a megabyte of space if it shares the file system with one of the following. Either the database path, so we'll explicitly not try to use the last 32 megabytes off a storage path that also has the dbpath relying on it. And if the dbpath happens to be the system directory on Windows, you know, we'll try to keep at least 64 megabytes free on that. Slide 49, automatic storage on DPF. So in DB2.9, we added support for automatic storage on DPF. By default, the storage paths are homogeneous across the database partitions. So if in this example here, I have a two-node DPF instance, and I say create database, my database on path 1, path 2, dbpath on slash DB1. So in this case, automatic storage is going to be enabled. This is DB2.9, so it's enabled by default, and you specified two paths. On partition 1, the storage paths are going to go under node 0000 slash mydb, path 2, you know, node 0000 mydb, and the database path is going to be under slash DB1. On database partition 2, you have the storage paths the same, path 1 and path 2, right? We're not assuming that they share a file system or anything like that. Just that the namespace is similar, and then we create a subdirectory node 00001 for partition 2. Slide 49. So if you desire, you can use non-homogeneous setups, and the way you can use this is you have a $n expression that you can specify on your path. So what we will do is we'll substitute that $n expression with the node number. Right, so if you really need the storage paths to be different, to start at a different root essentially, right, we allow you through this type of syntax to do this. Slide 51. So when you create a database, so this is new functionality for DB2.9, the default is automatic storage is enabled. And the default database path is the default DB path, and that's the default storage path. If you specify automatic storage no, right, you have the ability in DB2.9 to not use automatic storage. And in that case, the default DB path is going to be the DFC DB path. And there's some other examples over here that you can look through as well as on your own. So finally, this is the final slide that I have in this presentation. Broken things down into a nice matrix that shows you your tablespace options and what each option can do for you, right? So SMS is an option. Well, you don't have a single point of storage management. You've got multiple tablespaces. You have to provide containers on a per tablespace level and manage those file systems. You get auto container growth because SMS implicitly is auto growth. You don't get auto stripe set addition. In fact, you don't have any kind of stripe set addition in SMS. And for file system buffering, you can pick whether you want DirectIO or CIO or not. And it doesn't allow different table spaces to use different buffer pools, right? So it doesn't allow you to have different table spaces and buffer pools for tables, data, or index, or long data, like DMS does. And the underlying infrastructure, of course, is DMS. ZMS, there are really three variants. There's file, raw, and then file with auto resize. And DMS file, you know, again, DMS file and DMS raw are not a single point of storage management. The normal DMS file and DMS raw don't allow auto container growth or auto stripe set addition. The normal DMS file with that auto resize, yes, you can select what type of file system buffering you want, whether you want it or whether you want direct/concurrent IO. And it does allow you to pick different table spaces and buffer pools for the different object parts of the table. And the underlying technology here is DMS. DMS file with auto resize, you still don't have a single point of storage management here. You do have auto container growth, so remember it's the last range that we grow in this case. You don't have auto stripe set addition. We're going to stop if one of the two containers fill up the file system, and it's going to be up to you to resize it or add a new stripe set. You can pick what kind of file system buffering you want, and this also allows you to break up your table's object parts into different table spaces and buffer pools, and this also uses the DMS technology. With automatic storage, you get the single point of database management, storage management. So you add storage at the database level. You define your storage at the database level. You get auto container growth, so all your table spaces continue to grow so long as there's space. You get automatic stripe set addition, so unlike DMS file auto resize, we don't stop. We go to when one of the file systems fill up, we go to the database and we look at how much free space there is. And if there's free space in other storage paths, we'll create a new stripe set and we can continue to grow. You can also pick whether you want file system buffering or not. And it allows different table spaces and buffer pools to be used for the different parts of a table. And the underlying infrastructure here is DMS for permanent automatic storage table spaces and SMS for temporary automatic storage table spaces, with the difference that we will redefine the containers for a temporary automatic storage table space every time the database is started up. Okay, so that's the end of the presentation. I'd like to hand you back to Ravi.
Thank you. At this time, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all the possible responses, please respond by firmly pressing the star key followed by the number on your touchtone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And the first question is, the level of technical detail in this presentation was star 1 for about right, star 2 for not technical enough, and star 3 for too technical. Again, the question is, the level of technical detail in the presentation was star 1 for about right, star 2 for not technical enough, and star 3 for too technical. And we'll pause to allow everyone a chance to respond. Okay, and today's second question. The overall teleconference rating, star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, star 4 for poor. Again, the overall teleconference rating, star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, and star 4 for poor. We'll pause just a moment. Okay, and today's third question is, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding the DB29? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding DB29? Star 1 for yes, and star 2 for no. And we'll pause just a moment. And today's final polling question, would you like to be contacted about joining the International DB2 Users Group? Star 1 for yes, and star 2 for no. Again, would you like to be contacted about joining the International DB2 Users Group? Star 1 for yes, and star 2 for no. And we'll pause just a moment. And that does conclude today's survey. At this time, we will go to Q&A. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, for questions, it's star 1. And we'll pause just a moment to assemble a queue. And we'll take our first question from Kathleen Hennessy. Please go ahead.
I had a question about why, first of all, in the create database statement, why in version 9 the yes was made to be the default? It seemed like an odd choice to me.
So really this is automatic storage, we believe, is going to be is the strategic storage answer for DB2. And we would have actually preferred to have made automatic storage the default in version 8, but obviously we couldn't do that just because it was a point release. So we expect to build more and more functionality on automatic storage, which is why we believe it was the right answer to make it the default.
Okay, and I have one other question. For that create statement, what does that last part mean, apply DB only, DB and DBM, and none?
What slide were you referring to?
Oh, sorry, slide number 16. So just so you can get a preview of...
Okay, sorry, can you repeat your question?
It's slide number 16.
Okay.
I would like to know in that create database statement,
mm-hmm.
the very last, well, it's like the middle line, apply DB only, DB and DBM, and none. What's the purpose of that statement?
Okay, to be honest with you, I don't really know. But that's not something new that we added for automatic storage.
Okay, I was just curious if you could get like a preview of how it works. And is there any way to turn off automatic storage?
So once your database has been created using automatic storage, you can't turn automatic storage off because your catalog space and user space one, and you could have more table spaces using it, right?
Okay, thank you.
However, bear in mind that you know, just because a database is automatic storage enabled, your table spaces don't have to be using it, new table spaces. You can create table spaces as SMS or DMS and explicitly specify containers.
Thank you. We'll go next to Syed Mudassar. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have a question about the DMS strategy that IBM has started implemented versus RAR devices.
Yeah.
I would like to see, what are the performance implications, because the RAR devices were supposed to give more performance in terms of I/O, in terms of IOs. If you have any, kind of advice on that.
Sure. So, the story about 5 years ago or so was that fairly consistently you could get about a 10% performance boost using RAW devices. And much of the reason for that was the extra code path that was involved with going through the file system's buffer cache. So as you know, DB2 has its own buffer pool, and we're caching the pages in DB2's buffer pool that we believe are most relevant to DB2's use. And so traditionally what has occurred is that there was an extra layer of caching, which was the file system, that we were really writing through, but we were going through, we had to go through that code path, and that's where a good chunk of that performance penalty was coming from. So in version 8, we added a new functionality called no file system buffering. So this is also what I've been referring to as concurrent and direct I/O. So on a per table space basis, you can tell us that you don't want us to use file system buffering for this particular table space. And what that will do is when we open the containers for that table space, to do I/O will tell the file system explicitly, don't use your buffering. So avoid a good chunk of your code path that was causing us performance troubles compared to raw. And what we've measured on file systems like JFS2 using concurrent I/O, right, which is their flavor of no file system buffering, the performance differential between raw devices and JFS2 using concurrent I/O is now down to, you know, single digit percentage. So we're talking about a 1% or, you know, 1.5% type of difference. And now when you're down to that point, the manageability advantages of file systems we have found from talking to many customers tend to override the negligible performance benefit that raw devices are offering.
All right, thank you. It means that we still have the control to bypass the file system cache.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Anand Gopalakrishna. Please go ahead.
Hi, yeah. I have a question regarding the auto-resize command. I would like to know how auto-resize would work in this scenario. Say, for instance, you have a table which has data resides in one table space and index on another a separate table space. And would it be possible for me to enable auto-resize only to the data table space without having this option enabled for the index table space? If yes, what would happen, say, for instance, I'm loading the table using load command, and I happen to fill up the table space, and since I've got the auto-resize enabled for data, obviously it can grow and expand. And when it comes to the index rebuilding phase, what will happen?
Okay. So the answer is yes. Auto-resize is something that you can specify on a tablespace by tablespace basis, right? And what would occur when you were doing a load command is since you've got your application's data really in two places, right, when load gets into the index rebuilding phase, if it needs to use more pages than it previously did, right, because you might have had free space, it might not even need to use more pages. If it does, then you'll get an SQL code, you know, 289 on that load command.
Okay, so technically, I mean, it will finish the loading, but you will have problem only when it comes to the index rebuilding phase.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from John Hare. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just had a question in terms of number of storage paths. Is there any advantage? Is there any breakpoint where you want to define, even though you're using maybe the same SAN, a number of storage paths? And any other configuration items you might hit on, like for a while we were using the DB2 IO parallel registry variable, and whether or not that's still applicable?
Sure. So I actually have several other presentations that I've done in the past on just storage configuration. So what I'll do is just in a sort of a few sentences tell you what my best practices are for those things, right, as specifically as they apply to automatic storage. So the best practice that I would tell you for automatic storage is for every storage path, what you should be doing is that being one file system, right, that's just used by DB2, right, and that file system being backed by one LUN at your on your storage array. So you have, you know, one RAID 5 array out of which you create one LUN, and on that one LUN, which is exported to the host, you create one file system. So you've got, as a best practice, what you ought to have is no more than two levels of striping, one which is being done in the RAID array, and then the other which is being done in DB2. So you can create multiple of these LUNs. Each of these LUNs are one RAID 5 array. Create a file system on your host using each of these LUNs, and then provide that file system to DB2 as the storage path. In terms of parallel I/O, all of that is still applicable. In any real enterprise environment, when you give us a file system, that's typically going to have more than one spindle underneath it. So what you need to do is you need to use the DB2 parallel I/O registry variable, and that has that when you're using automatic storage, you should set that to star, unless you have specific table spaces that you're creating that are not created on RAID devices. And we also have an expanded syntax for DB2 Parallel I.O. that allows you to communicate to us that under every DB2 container, how many spindles are there. So if you're using something like, you know, RAID 5, 4 plus 1, right, where there's effectively four spindles under each DB2 container, then you should set DB2 Parallel I.O. to equal *,4. So that's telling us that Parallel I.O. applies to all the table spaces. And by the way, under each container in every table spaces, there are four physical spindles.
Thank you. Can you comment on the magnitude of the striping with DB2 as well for best practices? That you have four paths per CPU or 20 paths per CPU or
the magnitude of the striping, the best practice for that ought not to be really the number of paths per CPU. It's really number of spindles per CPU, right? Because paths now, when you do this LUN thing, right, you've got this RAID array, and then on top of that you've got a file system, right? A path essentially maps to one RAID array, right? So as a rule of thumb today, if you want to keep your CPU, if you want your CPU to not be waiting on I/O, you want about 15 physical spindles per CPU, right? And that's significantly different from what it was like even 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I used to tell people it was, 8 to 10. But CPUs are relatively becoming much, much faster than disks are becoming faster. Disks are just becoming bigger. And so one CPU can drive 15 unique spindles. And so that's the number that you really should aim for.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from William Schott.
Question here is, if I have laying out a very large database, I'm concerned with using automatic storage management as good as it sounds, because if I have, for example, 12, 15 different DB paths I'm laying this out over, I'm just concerned that we would end up taking some tiny table space and you're going to spread it into 12 containers. And is there any way to do like classes of these containers where like I could have these really large table spaces broken out but some smaller ones just local without messing with the managed by database?
Yeah, so bear in mind that if you have small table spaces, right, you can specify an initial size that is smaller than what is our default initial size, right? So our default initial size is 32 megabytes, right? And we would try to stripe that everywhere, but if the initial size only calls for less striping, I think we would choose less containers. But in general, we've thought about this concept of having storage groups. So today, the way things are implemented is that there's one storage group. This is an internal concept so far in the database, and it's called the database storage group. And all the storage paths come in that storage group. And so we've thought about the concept of allowing you to define storage groups. So, my big storage group with, 10 storage paths, and then my small storage group with 2 storage paths, and then saying at a per table space basis, this is the storage group I want that table space to use. So this is something that, will be considered for a future release of DB2, but it's not in any plan. But these are the types of scenarios that we see it being used for.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to William Skurlock.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. The question is, if we have a database with an automatic storage enabled, we take a backup of that database and redirect, restore it to the database where the automatic storage is off, will that change it back to the automatic storage on?
So I don't actually believe we'll allow you to redirect a database with automatic storage off to a database with automatic storage on to a database with automatic storage off.
Okay.
I think we'll just fail to restore at that point, because when automatic storage is being used, right, we're depending on a certain functionality that the database has to provide, and anywhere that you try to redirect it, we have to be able to get that functionality.
Okay. So it doesn't change that database which is initially created with automatic storage off back to automatic storage on, since the backup is having the feature of automatic storage on.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. We'll go next to Ira Feldman.
Yes, I think you answered this partially with the concept of storage groups, but I was wondering if you track the storage that's available for the, across the storage paths as metadata in the DB2 catalog.
So we don't track it as metadata in the DB2 catalog, but you can get at this information using the either the snapshot monitor or one of the table functions that will allow you to get this as through SQL. And I've actually listed that in the monitoring slides.
I guess what I wasn't clear about is the if you were had insufficient storage
right.
for the storage paths that were defined
yeah.
and you were not aware of it, then of course you're going to have problems.
Right. Now, so we have a health indicator. In that session, I pointed you to a health indicator that you can actually set a health indicator that says that when my database's storage paths, the file systems, you know, get above 80% utilization, you know, send me a page or that type of thing.
So there is a health indicator for that attribute.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And it's exactly for the type of scenario you talked about.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll go next to Jane Will.
Hi. Can we just change from a non-automatic storage automatic storage by auto-database add storage?
So, unfortunately not. So far in version 8 and version 9, you can't change a non-automatic storage database to automatic storage. Really, the only way is really an export and a load. We're using DB2 move to do that. That's something that, you know, we're trying to bear in mind for a future release, but it's that ability is not there now.
Okay, thanks. Next question is I can see the table spaces with auto resize is very flexible. So it's almost comparable in terms of flexibility to SMS. But however, how about this high watermark? Say if you dropped some tables in between, and would high watermark still stay as it is currently,
yeah.
like DMS file?
Yeah. So the high watermark issue isn't specifically related to automatic storage, but it's really an artifact of DMS table spaces. So you know, there's no real change to that. The one change that's going to likely happen in vNext will be we're doing some work in the high watermark area to specifically target the cases where it was held up by DB2 space map pages and that sort of metadata so that high watermark doesn't become much of an issue but you know high watermark can still be something you have to work around in this environment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Kishore Lingamalu. Please go ahead.
Hi. The question I have is when we have automatic storage turned on and when the table spaces reach to the limits, like 4K pages has limitation to growth and as well as 8K and 16K, 32K. To certain sizes, how does it react?
Automatic storage table space is really a DMS table space, mm-hmm. right? It's really a DMS file table space, and it reacts in exactly the same way any DMS table space would react. So you would get an error message back saying that you know this is as far as the table space can go because you've reached the logical addressing constraints.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take our next question from Scott Martin.
Yes, hi, Amr.
Hi.
Okay. Yeah, a couple of questions. On slide 50, and maybe you covered this and I missed it, with DPF, you had an example of slash P dollar N, comma, slash P dollar N, which to me looked like you ended up with two identical containers. Am I not understanding that, or was that a mistype?
No, so let me look at this again. So what the dollar N was supposed to do, right, it was supposed to allow you to really have two different storage paths on the different partitions. So on partition zero, that dollar N allows your storage path to be slash, let me think this through again. Yeah, you're right. I think there's a mistype there.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
No, you're right. Looks like there's a typo there.
Okay. The other question is, for best practice, you suggested to use a different storage path for DB path for the database control stuff. I guess the issue is, in the environment in which I work, we have a external storage that, let's say, has six arrays, and either the DB, you wouldn't want to have a DB path isolated on an entire array, because to me it seems like that would be a waste of a bunch of spindles. So either the DB path would end up having to share one of the arrays, or the DB path would end up having to go on an internal spindle, like an internal P-series spindle, which
right.
then wouldn't have any caching. So I'm just asking, in that situation, would you recommend that the DB path just simply coexist on one of the arrays, or would you actually recommend that it be kept on an internal spindle?
Yeah. So, the you know, normally I recommend that you don't use your spindles for any one set of spindles for any more than one storage path. But, you know, we have a pretty good idea of what the volume of activity is against the DB path. It's not going to be very high at all. So there's really no real problem with it sharing the set of spindles. What's more important, I think, is that you really have that as a separate file system in the scenario you're talking about, so that all the storage paths are just dedicated, that space is just dedicated to being storage paths.
All right. In other words, not shared with any non-DB2.
Right. And,
yes.
and the space there in that file system not being shared with the storage path.
Oh, you're saying have the DB path be in its own file system, but on the same array? Is that what you're saying?
Right, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, all right. And then just one final question. It seems to me when you use automatic storage and automatic prefetch, the net result is that the prefetch is going to end up hitting every spindle on the entire system. You know, I guess maybe that's a good thing, although if you're in primarily an OLTP environment and you have the occasional prefetch, now it seems that you're going to prefetch across every single spindle. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that when you're combining automatic prefetch with automatic storage.
Yeah. So my opinion is that you know, that is exactly what you want. There was a time where you know, we used to try to figure out exactly what table went on what spindle and what part of what spindle. And the reality is that in any large type of workload, you're just not going to be able to have enough time to control the stuff. And so the best you're going to be able to do is have a layout that allows all your spindles to spin evenly, right? And so I would much rather see you in a layout where all your spindles are about as busy as every other spindle in the system, and all, you know, just uniformly utilized, and your prefetch hits all the spindles that you have, right? Can you get the last, you know, can you eke the last little bit out of your IO subsystem by specifically targeting things to certain spindles? You know, yes, but I think that in the grand scheme of things, you know, you would spend a lot. Your time would be much better spent on your schema, right? And really dropping that index you don't need or creating the index that you need versus fine-tuning storage at this level.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Mark Mulligan.
My question was, how do we move a DB2 database that's got automatic storage turned on from one server to another?
So a DB2 database that has automatic storage turned on,
yeah,
from one server to another.
Mm-hmm.
So one option is that. So you want to continue using both databases, right? So you can do a backup and a restore. That's one option.
Onto another server?
Right.
You don't have to do a redirect or restore.
You could. So if you have the same storage paths that the original server has.
Let's assume we have different storage paths.
Okay. So it's actually pretty easy. So if you have different storage paths, let's say that you take a backup, right?
Uh-huh.
And then what you do is on your restore command, you say restore this database on, and you give it a new set of storage paths.
Okay.
And it will go out and it will redirect every single automatic storage table space onto those new storage paths.
Right, so there's really no need for redirect or restore anymore.
Exactly, and so you can go to more or less paths, you know, whatever the case may be.
So you're telling me that I could take a database on one server, back it up, take that backup, just restore it on another server, and if I need to change all the paths, I can do that.
Exactly, and you can just do that on the restore command. Now, bear in mind that if you have table spaces in there that are not automatic storage table spaces, so you've created DMS table spaces and specified specific paths, you'll have to redirect those by hand, right?
Okay.
Just as you did before.
Thank you. We'll go next to Tim Hennings. Please go ahead.
We have a question here, and maybe this is more for clarification, but let's say we have a database right now that's non-automatic storage and is using DMS file containers. Can we take a backup of that database and redirect, restore it into a database that has automatic storage turned on?
So the answer is no. You can't do that today.
Today, what does that mean by today?
Yes. Oh, that means that you're not the first person to ask me for something that would allow you to do this, right? And that's something that, you know, we're thinking about and hope that we can do at some point in the future.
So at this point, if we wanted to migrate an existing database to automatic storage, we'd have to do like a export, drop the database, and then import all the data back in?
Yes, that's unfortunately the only choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, it appears there are no further questions. That does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect your line at any time.